Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Today on the show, we're diving deep into the starfighter uses and tactics of the Star Wars universe. Red Group, Gold Group, all fighters follow me. All squadrons report in. This is Jaden of Gold Squadron, and in attack position is my co-host, Connor.
That's right. I'm standing by. Proton torpedoes are locked and loaded. Let's do this.
Oh, yes. No proton bombs, please. They float too much.
Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. And we're taking this one back to a galaxy far, far away.
Absolutely. It's been a long time since we've been able to talk Star Wars. Nothing really happened recently for us to talk about, except for the new Star Wars video game, Star Wars Squadrons, came out a couple of months back, and we've finally gotten it around to tackling it.
That's right. It was a really fun game, honestly. I was excited about it. First time I heard about it, you know, just thought, oh man, it'll be like the space combat from Battlefront 2, but on its own and kind of more developed. And yeah, they really leaned into that fantasy of like, oh, you're that pilot, you're surviving these white knuckled dogfights with your opponents, and you know, having your buddies back you up in a team based situation. It's really cool. It's a good time.
Absolutely, I really did feel like they got the flying aspect of it right, because I felt like, I don't know how you felt about it, but in Battlefront 2, it kind of felt like I was strapped to the front of a rocket and didn't really have much control over where I was going. And the starfighter just flying feels so good in this version of it. It feels like it's a little bit faster than like the old Rogue Squadron games, or the old X-Wing games on PC, but this definitely feels really good to fly. You really do feel like you're in a cockpit.
Absolutely.
Especially if you have those $800 flight sticks, which I do not have.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. But no, the heart and soul of Squadrons is really just that starfighter feel, just being in the cockpit and feeling your machine. And it's all about the fighters in that game, which is really cool. But the story mode of the game, which I enjoyed, again, I think, you know, we both enjoyed the campaign of Star Wars Squadrons. But what we're here to talk about today specifically is some questionable fighter tactics that the game's campaign sort of centered around that we have some issues with. but before you worry, this is not one of those pedantic nerd rants, you know, where we're kind of like pulling our fedoras down over our eyebrows and going, well, actually that wouldn't work. that's what we're going to try and get into is like how, even from the perspective of the movie based canon and other games and just other instances from the Star Wars lore, even from that perspective, the fighter tactics in Star Wars Squadrons were not very...
It's a little silly.
We're not sound, yeah.
Yeah, they're a little silly. This, like he said, this is not going to be a, meh, Disney Star Wars bad. Okay, maybe a little, but not for the majority of it. I think first we do need to do a little background on what's going on in the game. So Star Wars Squadron takes place after the fall of the Empire, after the Battle of Endor itself. And the Rebel Alliance is no longer the Rebel Alliance. They're actually transitioning into what's known as the New Republic.
Yeah, they went legit.
They did, which is hilarious to me, because they're like, hey, we exist now.
we're the real deal.
Which is really funny, because there are instances in the game when you talk to your squad mates and they're all just like, the Trandoshan pilot, he's just like, yeah, I used to be able to smuggle whatever I wanted, but now that we're legitimate, I could get in trouble. Meanwhile, the Imperials are running amok, trying to regain control, any sort of control that they can, on the galaxy at large, even though everything's kind of unraveling on them, which we will talk about we're not going to get super far into it because it's no longer canon, but we do need to talk about the EU a little bit and talk about the differences between the timeline of the old canon versus the new canon, because there are some drastic differences.
Right. I guess the main takeaway there is just that, like, at this point in the timeline, or at least this version of the timeline, like you said, Jaden, it's like just the New Republic, formerly the Rebel Alliance, is on the rise. They're gaining in power. The Empire is declining. So, like,
a meteoric rise and decline at the same time.
Exactly. So they're meeting in the middle a little bit, where the power levels are roughly even. Like, it's now a fair fight, which is pretty interesting.
It's very interesting. But as we know, the Rebel Alliance was never really able to go toe-to-toe with the Empire, what with their smaller ships.
Right.
Which is why they had to change it up a little bit. Connor, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. When we meet the main characters and sort of the main conflict of the Star Wars Squadrons campaign mode, we see that the New Republic is kind of having this new initiative. They're in the process of designing and building a new prototype flagship called Project Starhawk. And the idea behind Starhawk is that this is like the new, like the way that the Star Destroyers sort of exemplified and symbolized the Empire. Mm-hmm. Starhawk will do that for the New Republic, and it'll be big, imposing, powerful, capable of going toe-to-toe, like we said, and defeating Imperial Star Destroyers. So it's that's what the story mode kind of revolves around, and we see that conflict from both sides of the war, kind of like the Imperial perspective, the New Republic perspective, and we get into the human elements of both sides of that conflict, which, again, pretty cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, long story short, the Empire does not want Project Starhawk to go forward. So that's where the conceit is. It's just, as the New Republic, you're trying to complete this project, as the Empire trying to stop it. And in the process of that conflict, you know, like advertised, Star Wars Squadrons is kind of all about the squadrons of fighters. You spend most of the game in the cockpit of a wide variety of ships. You know, when you're playing as the New Republic characters, you have access to, obviously, the classics like the X-Wing, the A-Wing, the Y-Wing, even the U-Wing, the kind of...
the newer ship.
Yeah, the newer one introduced in Rogue One. So, and of course, on the other side, you've got the TIEs, the TIE Fighter, TIE Interceptor, TIE Bomber, and the TIE Reaper. But, so you have access to all these different types of ships, and, you know, you kind of choose which one you want to use on each mission. Sometimes the mission will require you to fly a certain one, mm-hmm. but other times you have the option. And, of course, both in the game and in the canon alike, you know, on both sides of it, there are different strengths and weaknesses to each type of fighter. They have different top speeds, different shield strengths, different hull thicknesses, different payloads.
Different loadouts.
Exactly. And this is all really important. Like, you have to understand how different each ship is from the others. Like, they are good at different things. And that's important, right, Jaden? Like, what they can do in a situation like that?
Absolutely. You just have to realize a special, you know, just like in our real world military, you know, you wouldn't send a fighter to do a bomber's job and vice versa, because you need to have the ship has to be specific to the mission that it's carrying out, which Vanguard Squadron is different because instead of having 12 ships of the same ship, it is a squadron that is literally just a mismatch. There's just a bunch of the different types of ships all smashed together into one abomination, for lack of a better word.
Right. I think one really important thing to understand about this topic is that there's this concept of mission profiles. A starfighter, or in like the real world parallel in our lives, is, you know, aircraft, fighters and bombers. They have different mission profiles, things that they are able to achieve in combat. And you mentioned Vanguard Squadron. Vanguard Squadron is the squadron of fighters that you play as on the New Republic side, and their sort of their opponents on the opposite end of the war is Titan Squadron from the Empire. And in both cases, both Vanguard and both Titan, they always deploy on each mission, like you said, Jaden, in a mismatch. Like, Vanguard will have maybe two X-Wings, an A-Wing, a Y-Wing, and a U-Wing. And Titan will similarly have like two TIE Fighters, an Interceptor, a Bomber, and a Reaper. So it's all just, it's scatterbrained. And that gets us into sort of the main thrust, our main argument here. That's a bad idea.
Yes.
So there's a serious flaw in this thinking, which is outside the confines of this game, like if you look at the canon, the Star Wars canon, and most of the instances from the movies or the books or whatever, fighters will get quickly picked off and shot down when they can't match each other's speeds, match each other's capabilities. In Squadrons, it's fine because, you know, in that game, if you get shot down, you just respawn and you just come back in. It's fine. Like the same five fighters just kind of keep respawning. So it's not a big deal, but doesn't work that way in kind of the entire rest of the canon.
To bring it back to one of the old canon books, I'm going to be referencing the Star Wars X-Wing books a lot. And one of the things, and I know they're not canon anymore. Get off my back, Disney. But they do give us a great amount of insight into what life as a squadron pilot in the Star Wars universe is. And until, you know, another book comes along that adequately tells that story, I'm going to use it as canon. I know Alphabet Squadron exists and the books are, you know, they're good books, but they're not as detailed, in my opinion, as the X-Wing books. Anyways,
sure.
There's a sequence where they talk about logistics, and logistics is one of the most boring things in all military doctrine that you know, you see and you go, oh God, I don't care how many ration packs, but it is the most important thing. In fact, many historians will tell you that World War II was only won because of the Jeep and the truck, because they were able to get the supplies to the front lines fast enough.
Yeah. Logistics aren't what you see action movies made out of, but that is what wins wars. Absolutely.
Exactly. And the Rebellion, who the New Republic was, they were strapped for just about everything. Mm-hmm. And there's a sequence in the X-Wing books where they're complaining about getting engine parts because they're building a new fleet. And they're like, oh my God, why did you bring all these new ships in here? There's no way I can get enough parts for all of them. Now imagine that for an entire operation. That was one squadron.
Right.
So imagine the Rebellion was like, we're just going to...
For a whole fleet.
Screw it. The entire fleet. You just... you pick your ship and you get to fly it, buddy. Whatever. It would be a nightmare.
And keep in mind, a lot of these fighters that the New Republic used were built by different manufacturers. So the parts aren't standardized. Like, there's no standard template of, you know, of just a mechanical basis that they all operate off of. I mean, look at the B-Wing. My God, let's not even get into the B-Wing. Cause that's like,
I think we talked about this too, where it's like a human engineer who's been assigned the B-Wing needs to immediately be put on suicide watch.
Cause yeah, the B-Wing is powered by some sort of, Mon Calamari space magic that makes, you know, Rebel flagships so formidable and so iconic. They also are the people who built the B-Wing. And yeah, like you said, Jaden, good luck to a human mechanic figuring that shit out. Like, there's no way. And like, if you have to service a B-Wing on top of, you know, X-Wing, a Y-Wing, an A-Wing, a U-Wing, all of which need different parts and different skill sets to maintain, that's a logistical nightmare. But that's the logistical side of things. But I think we'll need to take a closer look at sort of the tactical level, the battlefield scenarios where...
I think so.
Let's say, for example, I mean...
Paint me a picture.
I'll paint you a picture. We're playing Star Wars Squadrons, right? And Vanguard Squadron deploys from their MC-80 flagship. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're flying like two X-Wings, a A-Wing, a Y-Wing, a U-Wing, a mishmash. And in the game, that works out fine because on paper, the theory is that, this deployment gives them maximum versatility. You know, you have the speed of the A-Wing, you have the firepower of the Y-Wing, you have the support utility of the U-Wing, you have the versatility of the X-Wing. But in real life, not real life because we're talking about a video game, but if you kind of take a closer look at the mechanical limitations of each fighter, the different top speeds and the different degrees of maneuverability mean that all the different ships within that group will struggle to keep up with each other. The slower ones, if you're all approaching the same target kind of from the same vector, the slower ones, like the Y-Wing or the U-Wing, they could fall behind and get picked off because they'll be sitting ducks. The faster ones, they might speed ahead. The A-Wing, the only advantage that it has is speed. Right. If it gets hit, it's dust because it has barely any armor, so it has to move fast all the time. Or it's a goner.
Like, imagine this scenario. So imagine you're in the A-Wing and I'm in the Y-Wing.
Right.
And you're flying, we're both flying in the exact same direction at a squadron of TIE fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You are just fast enough to get killed and I am just slow enough to watch you die.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm going to pedal to the metal. I'm going to gun the engine, go straight at him. And I don't have you to back me up because I've left you, you know, a whole parsec behind or whatever. That's a, I don't know, a whole light year behind me or whatever. And
yeah.
I get blasted and you have to watch because you're way behind me.
Yep.
And that's why we have also the different weapon loadouts. The different weapons that each type of fighter is able to carry means that it's more, it's better suited for different targets. Like, you know, interceptors, naturally, they are effective against enemy fighters. Bombers more so against hard targets like capital ships and space stations, etc. What this means, though, and this is important, if a squadron's a mishmash like Vanguard is, then that means it does not have a specifically defined goal or mission profile in terms of targets they can effectively engage. And that kind of like, it kind of makes me wonder, like, what is the point of five different types of fighters, this group of different types of fighters with different capabilities? Like, I guess the thinking is they're flexible. They can do anything, but they won't do that anything well, though. That's the problem.
Exactly. I think that obviously the out of universe explanation is that they want a hero, you know, or a fantasy fulfillment of flying whatever ship you want.
Sure, sure.
But in canon, the explanation seems to be just like that Vanguard Squadron is so, and Titan Squadron also, they're just so good at what they do is right. that they can, that they alone can take on problems that huge fighter squadrons can't handle.
Right.
But at the same time, you're really setting them up for failure when you're sending them out with such a bad mismatch. And just, there's only, if this was a wing of fighters that was mismatched, which they did experiment with that in the old EU. There was Rogue Wing instead of Rogue Squadron, which was a mix of three different squadrons of mixed fighters, which, you know, that worked, but that also was because there was, you know, 30 some ships in that squadron or in that wing. And so it's like there was still, you know, a trio of X-Wings, a trio of Y-Wings.
Right. But if you're like in Vanguard or Titan and someone takes out your bomber, like the one bomber in your squadron, then you're screwed if an Arcatens class cruiser or, you know, a Gazanti or whatever shows up and, you know, you don't have the bombs to take it out because your Y-Wing got shot down because it was too slow to keep up with you. And if you only have the one A-Wing to intercept enemy fighters, then you don't have an escort if that gets blown up. So it is a numbers game, like you said. Like, I think that's a great point, Jaden. You're making the point that variety is a good thing if you have the numbers for it.
Absolutely.
If variety doesn't count for anything if you only have five ships. And like, that doesn't give you the flexibility you need to make it worth it.
No.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, but stick around. We'll be right back.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We interrupt this podcast with a message from a different podcast. Hello, my name is Lawrence, a producer and host here on Lore Party, and I'm here to talk to you about our Last of Us 2 series. With humanity's last chance at a cure now seemingly gone, the world continues down its dark path. But nevertheless, life moves on. A now adult Ellie must confront the ghost of Joel's past, all while dodging religious cults, militant revolutionaries, and her own inner demons. Tune in to our Last of Us series as my co-host Leo and I discuss the ultimate moral questions the game posits, the characters caught in this conflict, and A-ha's hit single, Take On Me. Just hop on over to our Lore Party feed and search The Last of Us 2. Well, that's enough from me. Back to your show.
I think it's time we get to the evidence. Let's back up our argument
yes,
concretely here.
Your Honor, I'd like to present Exhibit A. we're going to we're going to go in through, we're going to transition from the video games into the established canon of the Star Wars universe. So if you're only here for Star Wars Squadrons, thanks for watching. But
no, don't listen to them.
For those of you hardcore nerds like myself who love the EU and the old and the new canon equally, you're going to love this part. Connor, why don't you hit us with our first example?
Sure, we'll do. One place we can start at, and we can start kind of at the beginning. Let's go back along the timeline to one of the earliest examples of quote unquote proper fighter tactics from Star Wars, which is the Malevolence arc from the Clone Wars cartoon. Very popular series, this Clone Wars show was, and actually, like, kind of season one, kind of right off the bat, they start with this really cool arc about the Separatist flagship, a prototype Separatist flagship called the Malevolence that was a dire threat to Republic operations, and it was a big deal. And
it's actually a direct parallel to the German battleship Bismarck that was launched during World War II. It was a super unkillable battleship that was the ultimate pride of the German Navy. It was the biggest battleship on paper. It couldn't be defeated by any other ship in ship-to-ship combat. But then it was defeated by bombers. Who would have thought?
But yeah, like, that's a great point. The Malevolence was such a big deal that, yeah, they had to sort of change the game up a little bit and pull out all the stops to defeat the Malevolence. It was that big of a deal. And so who do they send? None other than Anakin and Obi-Wan and other Jedi Masters. I think Plo Koon was there, too.
Plo Koon was there. Don't forget Snips.
Oh, of course, Snips. Yeah, obviously, she was there. Good old Snips. But and like in real life, when the Bismarck was destroyed, the Malevolence was only able to be stopped thanks to the clever use of fighters and bombers. And so basically, you might think the Y-Wing was only around during the Galactic Civil War with the Rebel Alliance. Not true.
Nah, man, that ship is old.
The Y-Wings are old AF. They were around during the Clone Wars, and the clones used them. So that was pretty cool. I didn't know that one before I first watched Clone Wars. So that was pretty
absolutely
neat.
Those, and that's even from the old canon too, that these ships are ancient.
But no, that, like, you know, as janky and old as they were, the Y-Wings were the key. But also part of the key was, again, numbers. Dedicated groups of bombers. Dedicated bomber squadrons. Like, not just, let's send five fighters and maybe one or two of them is a bomber and we'll take out the Malevolence. No, you needed dozens and dozens of Y-Wings in coordinated squadrons to do the job, to take out the Malevolence. But on top of that, those bombers needed escorts. So you needed similarly coordinated and dedicated groups of fighters, V-Wings, to make sure the Y-Wings were able to deliver the ordnance and kill the Malevolence.
Yes.
So that's one of the earliest examples we can see in the canon of fighter tactics taking on that sort of real-life flavor. You know, in real life, it is a numbers game. You have to send the right number of fighters to do the job. Y-Wing bombers swarming the Malevolence with explosives was what was needed, but you also needed coordinated, dedicated groups of V-17 Torrent fighters to make sure the Y-Wings got there intact. So even in this early example from the canon, we can see that fighter tactics in Star Wars, it doesn't cut it if you just send five random ships and hope that their versatility does the job.
Vanguard Squadron would be a lovely picture on a wall somewhere if they had to charge the Malevolence and take it out by themselves.
Exactly. But moving on, I think there's an example that sort of, it might seem like it goes against our argument here, but it actually doesn't. And that's from the original trilogy, right?
Yes. That would be the Battle of Yavin. Mm-hmm. During the Battle of Yavin, we see a huge squadron of Y-Wings and a huge squadron of X-Wings. And now you're probably saying to yourself, well, Jaden and Connor, you idiots, the X-Wings are the ones that ended up doing the bombing run. And I would say, well, listener, you idiot, they only had to do that mission because the Y-Wings were so terrible. They all got killed.
That's right. The original plan that the Rebel Alliance had to destroy the Death Star was that Y-Wings were going to be making the trench run. That's right. The famous trench run that Luke Skywalker made at the end of episode 4, he used the Force.
It was never his job.
It wasn't supposed to be his job. That's right. Gold Squadron was composed of Y-Wings, Y-Wing bombers. They were the dedicated bomber group. And Red Squadron, which Luke and Biggs and Wedge were all part of, they all were flying X-Wings. Their job was to escort. Again, you have this instance of dedicated bombers, dedicated escort fighters. They know their job. They have a specific job that suits the fighter they're flying. But like you said, Jaden, no plan survives contact with the enemy, unfortunately, and all of Gold Squadron were shot down on the way to the Death Star. So it fell to Red Squadron to make the trench run.
And who was left of Red Squadron, too. Right. Because that fight, there was mass casualties. What, 4 fighters made it away from the whole thing?
It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Including the Millennium Falcon?
It was ugly, but it had to be done. That Death Star had to go.
And I know what people are thinking too. You know, there's a huge example that we're leaving out, and it's the Battle of Endor.
Yeah, let's talk about Endor.
So the deal with Endor is very simple. You know, everyone always says, "Well, how come I saw so many ships, you know, flying around in Endor together?" Here's the thing: when the Imperial fleet ambushes the rebels at the second Death Star, the rebels were literally throwing everything that they had into this fight. The original plan. You know, Lando has the famous line, red group, gold group, all fighters follow me. They did it. He's not doing that. You know, the reason all those fighters are flying in there is not because like, oh, that was the plan. That was literally all they had left.
Right.
During that battle, they were not grouped into squadrons. They were grouped into what's called groups, which are bigger than wings. They are essentially, you know, squadrons that they can be anywhere from 40 to 80 fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see, you know, when he says red group and gold group, come, you know, come follow me, it's like 6 ships, because that's all that has survived the fight of the previous like hour or so.
Right.
You know, you see during the battle, you see like Y-Wings flying by themselves and X-Wings flying by themselves. That's because their wingmates are fucking dead.
Basically, this was a desperation move. This was not the original plan.
Absolutely.
The battle plan for the Battle of Endor was not, we're going to have a ragtag group of random different fighters just fly into the core. No, there were huge extenuating circumstances. Like another example of that is, you know, Lando advising Admiral Ackbar, hey, bring the rebel fleet in closer to the enemy fleet. Like get up next to the Star Destroyers and engage them at point blank range, because that might give us some cover from the Death Star that's shooting its giant planet killing freaking laser at us. So the Battle of Endor can be defined by extenuating circumstances.
Chaos.
Yes, and chaos, absolute chaos, and desperation moves.
Absolutely.
So to pull a lesson out of the Malevolence arc, the Battle of Yavin, the Battle of Endor, is that when you're deploying fighters in coordinated groups, you need to have specific objectives for them, and they need to be able to accomplish those objectives together in numbers. It's a numbers game, and you know, they need to have the same capabilities as their wingmates so that that job can be accomplished effectively.
Absolutely.
To bring it back home to squadrons, though.
Yes.
To be fair to the game, like I do want to say it's a great game. I really enjoy
it. Oh, it's an amazing game.
The conceit of it. Like we talked about how it really captures that pilot feeling. And that was the point. And the place that Vanguard Squadron and Titan Squadron both occupy in the lore is that idea of, you are the pilot, pick your ride, you know, pick the ship you want.
You are the squad.
Yeah. And it's a close-knit thing. Like, I think 5 characters, including the playable one who isn't really a character, but it's a stand-in for you as the player.
Exactly.
And the point of that 5 characters is to make it feel personal. And I get that. So, you know, not to knock Squadron's presentation of the Star Wars fighter experience. It's just that when you compare it to the rest of the canon, it doesn't hold up strategically.
Yes.
But that's okay. You know, it's just a game where, you know, you're shooting down other fighters. And
it's still fun. I think basically what we're saying is, if you wake up in the Star Wars universe, don't expect to be able to have your buddy fly a Y-Wing while you're flying an A-Wing. Most likely the two of you are going to be flying the same ship.
Yeah. Jaden, what fighter would you fly in?
Oh boy. I have been thinking about this question since I was 4 years old.
And I've been waiting my whole life for this.
I think our audience is going to just destroy us on our picks, but I will go down in a blaze of glory when I say that I think the Y-Wing is the best ship in the Star Wars universe. Ever since I was 6 years old and I fired up Star Wars Rogue Squadron on the N64, mm-hmm. and the guy comes on and he goes, ah, yeah, the Y-Wing. It's not fast or flashy, but it gets the job done.
Oh, yeah.
Because the workhorse of the Rebel, and I'm like, oh, man, I feel bad for this thing. And I'm like, no, this thing is great. Like, it's got the, it's a tank. It loves, you know, you can take the damage. It's not fast. The game's right. It's not fast, but it, I don't know. I love the fact it's got ion cannons on it. I can disable a ship and I can bomb the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the look of it. It looks like a, you know, a ship in the universe. It's got two giant engines strapped onto a T-frame and they just,
right.
It just looks like it has like that weird rocket ship look to it. And I'm just like, man, I love this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that the Y-Wing pilots are the bravest mother effers on the planet, man. Because they get wiped out all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say who has just more balls, the Y-Wing pilots or the A-Wing pilots, because A-Wings, you know, super thin armor,
like
ridiculously fast. You got to be crazy to fly one of those things. They're like a little, you know, it's cramped cockpit. If you make one wrong adjustment, if you steer one wrong degree, or you steer in the wrong direction, you smash into an asteroid. It's scary.
Don't even get an astromech droid for company.
Exactly. But no, the Y-Wing is a great pick. I love the Y-Wing. It's boxy looking. It looks ramshackle, but it has the guts and the grit to just blow shit up.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
What about you?
It's a great question. But it's hard. It's hard to pick one, but I think my personal favorite is probably the U-Wing, honestly.
Someone's a fan of the Vietnam War.
You got me. No, it's, yeah, it's kind of like a Huey helicopter, but it's more than that though. I like the idea of like transporting my buddies and, you know, being the support ship and sort of just swooping down and rescuing. And, you know, it's got guns too. It can put up a fight. You know, it's like, it's sleek too. Like, it's a little boxy. It has like that transport look.
It's got a weird elegance to it, I will say.
Yeah, it's elegant. Like, it has a little bit of boxiness to it because it's like, you can tell that it's a transport. Like, you can haul people. It's like you could almost live in it if you had to, which is great to me. I like that idea of, you know, this is my ship, but it's also my home. But on top of that, like the wings that sweep back, they're really sleek and awesome. I don't know. Just when the U-Wing was introduced in Rogue One, that was like one of my favorite parts of that movie. I just thought that ship is really cool and how it can like swoop down and drop off troopers and has that like door mounted gun that you can do flyby like air support with. It's so neat. The U-Wing is just so cool to me. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. Be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. And check out our YouTube page for bonus videos and highlights. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.